Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcast. With that said, let's get on the show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I think we'll run into a lot of security problems with serverless, where how do you isolate two functions from two different customers, essentially building a multi-tenant serverless architecture. I believe that will happen soon. Because let's think about how this works. Everyone, my function and your function, we kind of call the same endpoint. It's going to be the same IP addresses. They're not going to reserve different IP addresses for each one of them. That doesn't scale. So that means you and I share at some point the same server to make the decision to execute our function. And I believe some nasty hacker is going to find a way to exploit that. What is up? Dude, this is going to be a great year, guys. This is going to be a fantastic year. Let's get this show started. Let's make this year count, all right? Let's not make it like 2020. It's all in our hands. It's all in our hands. If you believe it, it will manifest. I sound like the scam artist. It's a snake oil salesman. You just believe it and it's going to happen. Cherok says, thanks for making the WebSocket crash course public. You are very welcome. Let me tell you the story about this course, guys. Ugh. You know, I started working on that course for a long time, right? And I made most of the videos that is in the course were on YouTube, but only for members. So it wasn't public, right? And it was on Udemy. But then, what my approach is, my goal is not to make money as much as I want to reach as much people as possible, because that kind of pour into my goal that I talked about many, many times in this channel, which is to become a better software engineer, to reach as many people, to help as much people as possible, right? Because that in turn kind of helps me, because you have no idea, guys, if you help someone, the karma you get back is just insane. Not just karma as logical points, right? Faith points. No, it's just, you have no idea that this person can give you back vital information that, hey, Hussein, thank you for doing this. And can you make a video about this topic, which I never heard about? And I go and explore that topic and it blew up in my face. And I learned new things that I never heard about. So because of that, I started learning new things. Because of that. So that's what I did. So I eventually make my Udemy courses free, but it takes time. And all of a sudden, what Udemy did, they changed their policy. They can't let you make the courses free if they are more than 2 hours. So I was screwed. So I was like, okay, let's start making. So I started building the course on YouTube and started building the videos here. On my beautiful Mac, which is the story I want to talk about. So I put the 5-6 hour videos and I put it down and I started putting on iMovie and I said, okay, all done. Let's do it. Let's push this 4K quality. Do it. And the machine says 23 hours. I was like, what? And guys, I never actually made one video 5 hours in one take. It's always like chopped up. It's like, what is going on? What? Why is it taking 23 hours? So I canceled it. After waiting for an hour, I was like, okay, this is just stuck. And then I canceled it. And then I did this. Okay, let me do it 1080. And then that took, I don't know, it says 18 hours. It's like, okay, this is just nuts. And then I realized that my machine is just, is not taking it. If I want to move in 2021 to this level of production, I need a new puppy. This puppy is not selling it anymore. So my Mac, I bought this Mac when I moved to the States back in 2015, October. So it's a decent Mac. It's a Mac laptop, MacBook Pro, whatever it's called. By the way, guys, I'm not that good in hardware. When I was a kid, I mean, when I was a teenager, my dad and I used to like assemble PCs and sell them. So I was responsible for the software side, and he would do the hardware side. So I don't know anything about hardware. I don't know very, very little. So this PC is 2.2 gigahertz quad core. I guess that's good, 4 cores. And Core i7 and 16 gigabyte of RAM. And I want 16 gigabyte of RAM. So I'm planning to do the M1 next, maybe next year or this year. I hope you get success like MKBHD. Oh my God, thank you so much. MKBHD is a badass, man. That guy is so inspirational. مساء الفل يا حسين كل عام وانت بخير. حازم says good night حسين and happy new year. Thank you so much حازم. I appreciate you, my friend. I know it's a little bit late in some of the rest of the world. We just started 2021 here in California. It's 11:30, a little bit more than 11:30 in the morning. So we're just so excited. All right, let's get to some questions and what are we going to do with 2021. I'm so excited. There's so much stuff I want to do. And guys, you know that I don't set like actual goals to do in 21. I have this overarching goal, which is I want to become a better software engineer. I want to become a better back engineer. I want to learn as much as possible in the back end. I want to just educate myself as much as possible and just share this knowledge. So if the opportunity comes, And it answers these two questions, it becomes my goal. The first question is, well, am I interested in this technology? That's the first thing. Second thing is, well, if it says yes, then it's an and, right? So it's a short circuit. And if that technology will help me reach my goal, which is to become a better software engineer, then if those two conditions are met, I do the tech. I learn the tech. And quick. Boy, quick is one of them. I want to handle quick. Quick is going to be big in 2021. Browsers will support quick. I see more browsers will default to quick. As browsers implement quick, the official IETF quick protocol in the client side, the servers will start moving to quick by default. And then Caddy, I believe, already started supporting that as a beta, I believe. Other web servers are going there. Cloudflare are building the web server libraries for quick. So there's so much exciting stuff, guys. What are you excited about 2021? Let me know in the comment section, in the chat to this. Let me know in the chat to this. Have you made a roadmap video for backend? I have not. I need some time to build a roadmap, in my opinion. I have an idea of how the roadmap looks like. And if you go to the beautiful site now, you cannot throw shade anymore. Backend of HusseinNasser.com. It actually looks pretty. It's pretty. Yeah, you guys made fun of my site because like I didn't have any styles or anything. But yeah, one of you actually volunteered to make the site pretty, and they give me like a bunch of CSS magic, and I don't know how it works, to be honest. It's just I checked and I says, okay, would I pay another 100 kilobyte to get this pretty site? I said, nah, let's do it. Cassandra versus Scylla. Oh man, I remember when I first heard about Scylla DB. It's On paper, Scylla is way better than Cassandra, right? Because it's C++. It's not Java as thick as Java, right? Compared to Cassandra. But all of a sudden, we didn't see it battle-tested, Scylla, compared to Cassandra. Cassandra is battle-tested. But I believe Scylla is gonna start competing really hard. Scylla, I remember, it was like, it was 2016, 2017, I think, when Scylla started just popping up. And boy, it's a good database. So I want to explore both of them. Can you explain the solar wind hack? Thank you for the super chat, Rod. Appreciate you. The solar wind hack is one of these interesting hacks that I talked about in one of the live stream. And I just didn't make a video about it because, honestly, I didn't see details that interest me, right? It's just, let's explain how it happened, right? So there is this enterprise software that's called Orion that everybody's using, all companies, enterprise companies use for their networking health and stuff like that, right? And it's not something you can just download and work with. It's a private something, company that B2B kind of a thing, right? That's why we don't hear about this, like as you and I, normal engineers, right? As companies will know about this, right? Apparently someone, and I don't know who, right, managed to get access to Orion source code. And they didn't, what they did is very smart. They rebuilt the patching system so that it inject code. They did not change the actual code. The code of the Orion was good. They only changed the patching system so that the patching system starts installing that special software, which then gives you access to these command control. So, right. So Orion software is now installed in, I believe, Google, Microsoft. And I just read an article that Microsoft source code was exposed as a result of this SolarWind thing, right? And Firefly, was it Firefly? I keep FireEye and other companies, right? Have all this Orion software. And once a patch get kicked in as an update, if you say yes, the patch will start installing the malware version because it was modified. But now this malware version goes into the software undetected. Why? Because now it passes the check. Because Orion software was shipped and verified and signed, right? And then that tells me that those guys had full access to the source code so they can compile the software and sign it with their private key so that it's all good. Nobody can fake that stuff, right? It's just so interesting. And then once you're in, remember guys, just getting in as a malware, that's not the end. You still have so much work to do. And those guys, whoever built this thing, they know so much about this technology, right? So they started hiding themselves. And they said, okay, how do you, as if you want to build a software, how would you have it controlled by some other party? If you're an attacker, what would you do, right? Would you allow this Trojan to connect directly to an IP address that is essentially you, your command and control? No. If you do that, immediately you will be caught. Because it's like, wait a second, why is my Microsoft in the US, in Seattle, pinging from its network some IP address in Russia? That doesn't make any sense. Or if you're another company, like in I don't know, in Texas, why are you pinging something in Russia? So they thought this through. They said, okay, let's install the command and conquer somewhere else so that it sits in the same region as the Orion software, wherever this thing is. It's genius. And they didn't hardcode the IP address. They hardcoded C. They didn't hardcode. They did what is it called? Domain generation, which is a bunch of C names that is just get generated based on an algorithm, and the software just pings those C names, and those C names completely legitimate. And if one of the C names, that auto generated C names, hits an IP address, it will point to the VPN location which is in the same region, which then points to the point to the command and control in Russia, whatever. I don't know where it is. I don't want to make things up. So that's the SolarWinds in a nutshell. I know I missed a lot of stuff, but it is insane. It is insane. So that's why it's a very scary attack. Adwait Kumar Singh, thank you for the super chat. What metrics should a backend software developer track to know if they are growing or not? Growing? In what sense? The backend growing or the actual software developer or the backend developer? I guess I'm going to assume that you mean the actual backend engineer or the developer, how they actually evolve or grow. The goal here is, let's think. Like, how can I know that I got better? That's a very good question. Let's think about it a little bit. So I'm going to take myself an example, and that might not relate to you guys, but essentially, if I want to know that I became better, I compare myself to how I was 3 months ago or 6 months ago or 1 year ago, right? And basically, it's very artificial, right? Because I would ask, some metrics would be, describe how a query to a database actually, what a query actually does. And take a look at one word of query, right? Today, if you show me a query and I did a trace on the query, I understand way more than I know myself. I understand way more what happened compared to 2019 Hussein or 2020 Hussein, definitely, right? Because I start paying attention to things that I just was blind to, right? Like, I don't know, backward index scanning versus examples is how many rows were fetched and how the actual execution is happening. And I talk about example databases because I work with databases almost every day and different kind of databases. So that's just one example, right? If I'm going to mention Node.js, now I know, and CodeDam, shout out to CodeDam, great channel. He actually put a new video on advanced Node.js threading. And I had a misconception that the default threads on Node.js, I believe, is one single threaded, but I think I was wrong. So I need to kind of, I think I need to dig deep into that because you can adjust the thread pool on the HTTP server so that accepts multiple connections, and this is going to be served based on each thread. So that's very, very interesting, right? So I just start comparing myself, like, okay, if you ask me a question, right, any question, here's how you can determine if you got better or not. If you are excited to answer and you inside, you know way more than the answer itself, then you got better, essentially, right? Because that's what Jordan Peterson says, right? It's like, in order to speak effectively, you need to know way more, way, way, way more than what you're talking about, right? If I want to talk about, let's say, HTTP. If I want to talk about HTTP, I'm very comfortable talking about HTTP. And I can spend hours talking about that, right? But if you ask me to talk about, let's take TLS 1.3, I know personally that I can talk about TLS 1.3 as an transport mechanism, but I know that I don't know what really happens in the packets. I don't know every single field in the TLS. I don't know what are the different cryptography. And if you ask me about the actual cryptography, AES versus elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman, I'm going to stumble. I don't know these things. I know what they do. I know this is a handshake and this is a symmetric algorithm, but that's the limit of my knowledge. So if you ask me the same question next year and I was so comfortable because I know the inner of this and I know I'm going to answer only the shell, then I know that I got better. Does that make sense? I'm sorry. I've been mumbling all the time. I hope that makes sense. Karen. I am a microservices backend Node.js developer and I only know NAT streaming server for events. Have I heard about NAT streaming? I don't believe I did. Do you suggest any other event streaming technology? Well, for the event streaming, I mean, I don't know what NAT streaming is, to be honest, right? But what is the underlying technology for NAT? I would ask that question, right? Is that a software or is it an actual fundamental thing? Right? That's why, like, I don't really talk much in this channel about tools. If you notice, and you're gonna start noticing that if you start following me, but I don't talk about tools. I only talk about fundamentals and then relate to the tools on top of it, right? So the NAT server here in this case, for eventing, for the fundamental to your question is the eventing, right? How do you do eventing? Server sent events is the best thing that is related to this, right? The cheapest, I guess, right? The next thing, which is a little bit an overhead, I would say, WebSocket. And again, and I'm talking about within the web security model, because if you are not restricted with the web security model, just use TCP, right? That's the lowest latency possible, right? Or if you're feeling courageous, use Quick. What's my streaming setup? Literally nothing. I need to get better, I swear. My streaming setup is just this built-in camera. And this is Mac and OBS and some overlays. And this beautiful Mac. This puppy served me well. I am a Mern stack. Do you recommend learning microservices? Not really. You don't have Mahdi. You don't have to learn microservices. Remember, microservices is a hyped technology. So learn what it is. It is just a bunch of services that connect, talk to each other. Now ask this question to yourself. Can you build two MERN? What does MERN stand for? I'm not that good in the stacks. MERN stack. MERN stack. Mean or MERN? What is MERN? Mongo, Express, React, Node. Okay, Node and React. I don't know anything about React. So that's the client side, which is not really something I know about. But what matters, Express and Node and Mongo, right? So the database is Mongo, the Express, Node.js. I don't understand stacks, in my opinion. I mean, you can literally build unlimited number of stacks. Why would we? I guess these are the most popular. I guess that makes sense because we had the LAMP stack, right? I guess that makes sense. MongoDB, Express, and Node. So Node and Express, to me, those are the same thing, right? I mean, Express is built on top of Node, right? Isn't it? What is this thing? Ah! What is the lifetime? Okay. What was the question? We're asking about, So so Node, right? So that was your question about the microservices. So you know Node, you know Express. Forget about Mongo for a second. And Mongo is nice. The good thing about Mongo is it's already cluster technology, so you don't have to worry about that stuff. But for Node, here's the thing. Can you build two Node.js services that talk to each other? Don't look anything up, Mahdi. Don't look anything up. I am asking you, build one Node.js server, listen to a specific port, build another Node.js server, listen to a specific port, and build a React client, and send a request to one Node.js server, but that Node.js server talks to another Node.js server to give you the answer, right? Do this, and do this very simply in synchronous manner. And that third Node.js server has the database, which is MongoDB. So did you see the chain now? React, Node, Service A, Service B, and Mongo. So Service B talks to Mongo. React talks to, Service A, and Service A talks to Service B. Can you build something like that? The answer is you can, and you will. Do not look anything up. Go and do this right now. You will learn microservices, as simple as that. And then you start understanding that this is very, very challenging because the function that you used to call within JavaScript in service A, now just all of a sudden moved to service B. And you have to deal with circuit breaking. You have to deal with retries in case of a failure, because network calls must fail at one point, right? So that latency. And then you start asking questions like, how can you'll come up, Mehdi, you'll come up to me with questions. It was like, oh, okay, how can I connect service A to service B? Well, how do you connect React to service A? Express, HTTP, do the same thing. Do the exact same thing. Service A is now the client. Don't use React here. That's just ugly, right? But just use a normal HTTP client that connects that. Make sense? Hopefully it makes sense. Next.js put Node on top of React as well. Oh, I guess you can, huh, in this case. Can you explain socket IO in simple manner? Tech DJ JD ask. So socket IO, in order to understand socket IO, you must understand WebSockets. And that's the problem a lot of people make. By jumping into socket IO, we're having no clue what WebSockets is. That's why I made today's course, which I just published, and it took me only 15 hours to render the video, which is a 5 hours video. Talk about WebSockets as a base fundamental first principle. Understand how it works, right? Once you appreciate, you build your own WebSocket server and connect from the browser dev console new WebSocket server, pure, no library, nothing. Once you do that, you will appreciate what Socket IO does for you. Because if you know me in this channel, guys, I do not tell anybody to use any tool without understanding how it works. I know a lot of people disagree with me on this one. Do not use Express if you don't know how to build an HTTP server. And Brad Traversy swears by this, right? And then he made a course, I think, building a web server using vanilla HTTP server, which is so badass, right? Because it's so hard. He spent, I think, 2 hours building that course. That guy, man, that guy's so awesome. Brad Traversy, obviously, everybody knows that guy. So Brad, build that, right? You can build Express using HTTP server. You can build Django using Tornado, which is another Python web server. You can build anything on top of the fundamentals. Once you understand the fundamentals. So if you understand this first principle, and then you use that, you will appreciate it. Plus, first of all, you appreciate the work that the people behind Socket.io, the people behind Django, the people behind Express did. That's the first thing, because we as engineers, we need to appreciate each other's work. The second thing is, which I forgot, is going to make you a better software engineer. Because if there was a bug in Express, and you know how it works, guess what? You will not sit like this and says, oh, well, it's not my fault. It's those idiots that may build Express. I'm not going to do anything. No, you will step in the code and fix it because you're an engineer. Because you're interfacing with this directly, right? And you're gonna understand, at least, you're not going to fix it, obviously, you don't have to, but you can at least understand the problem. And once you understand the problem, you just feel good about yourself as an engineer. You don't understand how things work, right? And I know that you only can take this, I guess, not theory, philosophy so far, because you might say, well, Hussein, if you think so far, you need to understand everything. Just code everything in assembly, right? Not that far, right? So there is a limit, obviously, to what you need to go, right? And that goes into your interest, that goes into your career, that goes into how far you want to deep. That's kind of depth first versus breadth first. You guys, computer science, will know what the difference between the two. Abdurrahman al-Khatib. What is it? Is a backend software engineer considered to be a network engineering? I see you talking a lot about network aspect. It is the most important thing in a software engineer. Yeah, so Abdurrahman asked the question is like, What is a backend engineer really? It's a very backend engineering is a very abstract thing. Like frontend engineering, what does it mean? Was frontend engineering mobile development? Is it web development, or is it desktop development? Because technically, I've been a frontend engineer some of my life, early 2006, because I built desktop apps which connected to a backend, which happened to be a database. I was a front-end engineer because that's a front-end development, right? Back-end development, exactly the same thing. It's just the line blurs, right? That's why back-end engineering, personally, I believe one of the most important aspects of back-end engineering is networking. Because, and as we go through the microservices and Kubernetes, right, this becomes really, really critical. You need to understand how things work in the network, right? And a lot of engineers disagree with me on this one, because it's like, no, it's not a job of the back engineers, the job of the network engineer. Doesn't hurt to learn, because you're using TCP, you're using HTTP. How does this work? It's a network. You're using proxies. How does this work? Networking. So understanding TLS, understanding all this stuff boils down to networking. So that's why networking is very important. Do you have to understand every single thing in network? Do you have to understand what's the maximum segment size in TCP? Probably not. But guess what? Some people might go that far if they need to. That's the trick. If you need to, you need to learn how to learn. That's the trick here. And it's very hard. Rod just became a developer tier. Thank you for becoming a member. Enjoy the tons of free YouTube videos for members only. There's a lot of good old stuff there. Do I need Microsoft architecture for a large-scale chat app like Facebook? Please tell. Mishara says, do I need microservices architecture for large-scale? Nah. I mean, it depends how large-scale, to be honest. I wouldn't go to microservices, in my opinion, unless I absolutely need it. Because think about this, right? I'd rather go serverless than and not microservices. I'm that kind of scared of microservices because it's a slippery slope. If things became easier to manage, again, and you understand how it works, and just like become like a one push button, which is, I see this very, very far ahead, in my opinion, then yeah. But in this age, I'd rather build multiple serverless functions that does the job for me than actually scale with microservices. Right? The goal of microservices, like think about why did we build microservices? Just again, back to Mehdi's questions, like, oh, I am a Mirror developer, do I need microservices? I told him, hey, you have a service A and service B. Build a Node.js service, spin up an Express Node.js service and spin up another Node.js service and let them talk to each other. Just make a call to service A and let A call B and let B respond to A, and all of this synchronous. Don't have to be fancy and make it asynchronous or message queues or anything like that. And let deliver the answer back to A. If you do it, you just, congratulations, you just build this a services architecture. Now the question is like, how micro are these services? How small? Well, how small you want to get? Pretty small. Break them finer and finer. The more you break them finer and finer, the worse it can get, because you're going to get into this mesh architecture and it gets ugly. Mahmoud says, are you Arab? Yes, I am. I'm from Bahrain originally. Any videos on serverless? Not yet. Maybe in 2021. I'll be having few people that are deep into serverless and deep into Kubernetes, because I am not expert in those areas. Please, I saw a good question. Please elaborate on databases being stored on SSDs. That's a good question. Databases and SSDs. So solid state drives, guys. Solid state drives. The idea of solid state drive is to avoid mechanical moving parts. You probably know that. The physical hard disk drive have seeking, where you go to a sector and then you pull a block then you fetch a block, right? And it's all moving part. SSD uses flash NAND, I guess, to read and write pages. But the limitation for reading and writing, it reads only a block, right? And a block has many pages. And if you read and write a block, you are responsible to read and rewrite the whole block again, as it should, right? You cannot just go and change one thing in the block. That doesn't work right this way. If you want to change one byte in a block, let's say, example, that's why updates are the horrible for SSDs, horrible. Let's say you have a movie, right? A 600 megabyte movie. It's a big file. You want to edit that movie, you want to clip part of it, right? If you want to clip part of it, then you have to go into disk, whatever that page is, read that particular page, and if it has multiple pages, you have to read multiple pages, and then change that, and then write it back again. And if you do that multiple times, that page or that block eventually will die. There is like an only limited number of times. That's in the thousands, right? Now, let's take this to databases. Now that we know SSDs love to write, if you write a new page, knock yourself out. Writing is good because we just allocate a new page and then flush it. It's literally just write, big off one, even less than that, very fast. But if you want to change existing page, that is equal to an update statement. That hurts. Yep. And if you doing a lot of updates on SSDs, that hurts the SSD. It's going to do it. It's going to be fast. But if you understand how SSDs work, and again, this is one of the things that I'm not very comfortable with. I don't really know how SSDs work controller. I know this is the high level things, right? And once you understand that the updates are expensive, now go back to your statement, to the databases, right? If you're doing an update and your update slamming, I don't know, an update of a string field with a million rows, that's going to hurt your SSD because look at a work that the database has to do, right? It goes to disk, read, and then change something, and then flush write it. If the problem is like if you change these small things, right? Now go to databases with indexes, have two types of indexes, right? The databases. The classical index called B3, which is I talked about many times in this channel. And this is part of my introduction to database engineering, where the B3, the index balances itself. So let's say it's an empty table and you have an index on the ID, right? You add ID number one, it just goes there. You add number two, right? Okay, is two greater than one? Yes, put it in the right. And then you add three. You go, okay, is two greater than, three is greater than two? Go, oh, put it in the right. And then you add, I don't know, you add another two. Two is less equal to, put it in the left. And you start doing all this stuff. But if you add number four again, you start doing the trees like this, right? Goes all the way there. So the B tree balances itself by making three as the node and then moving four to the right and moving two to the left, right? So that's how it is called a rebalance. And what did I do now? I updated. A rebalance is an update. Because despite me inserting, that triggered an update. An update to the index equal bad thing for the SSD. I'm saying bad here is just being between quotes, but if you do it once or twice or 1,000 times, not that bad, but doing it a million times kills your SSD. Facebook realized that, and they built, actually Google realized that first, and they built a database engine called LevelDB. Let me write it down. LevelDB, so that with an index that is not B3, it's an LSM, log structured merge tree, where things are always inserted. There is no balancing. There is no magic like that. It's always insert. And this is the love inserts, right? If you insert in your new pages, knock yourself off. We're going to insert. We're going to insert. We're going to insert all the time, right? So that's how it works. So it does something in the memory level one, then does it again level two, level three, and level four, and does it in levels. Again, I don't know the technical detail. Facebook took that LevelDB fork it and built something called RocksDB. I'm sure some of you heard about that. And Cassandra was inspired by that, I believe. Cassandra was Facebook, right? Yeah. Cassandra, also inspired by the log structure merge tree from LevelDB. I might be wrong there. And they built Cassandra with write performance. And when I say write performance, like, how can I do writes without an update, right? And the B3 problem that we talked about. So Cassandra does an LSM. RocksDB does an LSM. Right, and then MyRocks, which is my SQL version on top of RocksDB, that's an engine. I think Percona does that. So yeah, that's essentially it. Does it mean that LSM is better than B3? No, it depends. Ahmed says, I discovered you because of Muhammad Sharif live. Where have you been hiding? I have not been hiding. The YouTube algorithm is finally smiling on us. Thank you, Ahmed. Appreciate it. To build a TCP, what is going on? How are you doing, guys? Good, awesome questions, guys. You guys are hungry for knowledge. Knowledge! Here in my garage. But you know what I like more than knowledge? Wait, that doesn't look like that. Backend! Knowledge. What is the most used programming languages in backend? I can't say. But I'm going to guess it's C++. But now things are changing, man. Who God knows? I mean, JavaScript is blowing up with Node.js now running on a server. Python is blowing up. C++ is definitely one of the best. Go is blowing up. Rust is blowing up. That's one of the things I want to learn, Rust. I mean, between Go and Rust. I mean, it's useless to learn multiple languages. It doesn't make any sense, right? Just pick something that you want to do and just do it. Don't overthink it, right? You either want Rust or Go or JavaScript. Nothing wrong with any language, guys. Don't fall to these videos that we're going to blow up in today and tomorrow. Everybody on YouTube, we're going to post videos, top programming languages in 2021. Everybody's going to post videos like that. Maybe I should too. Jesus. The videos, man. Top video. There is no top. There's no best. There's nothing. It's just languages. You can do anything with any language. It's just popular. So if you guys, you are the engineers, you decide what's popular or not. If you, all of you move to Go, Go's going to become popular. If all of you move to Rust, Rust is going to be popular. And that's why media have big influence. TechCrunch or whatever these things are, they're going to say, oh, we predict that Go is going to be the most popular programming language on the backend. Guess what? Everyone is going to move to the Go and it's going to be the most popular one. Hussein, will Quick help WebRTC? No. I do not believe so. WebRTC is built on the low-level UDP. I don't think it needs Quick. And I don't believe. It's a completely different protocol, dude. I don't think so. I might be wrong, though. A good question, Mark. Yahya says, if the NAT hide your public IP, how come zero-click attack get and hack your data? Let me try to understand the question. NAT hides your public IP. Well, NAT does not hide your public IP. Let's correct that first, right? So NAT, so here's the thing, right? Your router, one router, belongs to your ISP, right? And it has a public IP address. Not necessarily, right? But let's just assume it has a public IP address. And you, behind your router, your phone, your laptop, your fridge, connects to the Wi-Fi in your router to another interface, not the public one interface, not the WAN, the LAN. And the router provides you with private IP addresses based on the range. If the range is 10.0.0.1, it's going to give you 10.0.0 whatever. Right? If the range is 192.168.1.0, that's going to give you an IP address 192.168. Depends on the subnet and the mask and all that jazz, right? And you're going to get private IP addresses. These private IP addresses are not addressable on the internet. But if you want to send some packet to Google, you're going to ask the question, okay, Google IP address, let's say, is 1234, right? Your machine is going to do a quick calculation. 1234. And my IP address is 10.0.0.2. Let me submask that. It's going to do a mask on the destination and says, is this on my network? You're going to ask that question. Okay, what is the subnet mask of the google.com? If it's /24, if it's /whatever, right? It's going to do that. It says, no, that network is 1.0.0.0 and mine is 10.0.0. So nope, I don't know what, this is not me. If that question is not answered, it's like if the device doesn't know where to send it, it's not belong to the same network, it says, hey, gateway, help, I don't know where is this thing going, so I'm going to send it to you. So the machine targets the MAC address of the router as the destination frame with the target IP address as Google. But the MAC packet goes to the router instead of any other machine. If that is the same, if like, let's say, you're connected to 002 to 10.0.0.3, that's awesome. It's the same network. So I don't have to go to the router. Yes, it goes to the router in case of the switches, right? Router acts like a switch in this case and just forwards back the network, right? But it belongs to the same network. If it's outside, you send the router, the message to the router, and the router will say, okay, wait a second. This is, the destination IP is 1234, but that's definitely not for me. So yeah, I understand as a router, my job is to route this packet to the outside world. But look at this. Your source IP address is 10.0.0.2. You're naked, essentially. You're private. I can't let you go out like that, son. So it changes the IP address, the source IP address, to itself as a WAN. And it puts the public IP address. So now the internet sees your router's public IP address as itself. And that's just the gist of it. Right. So can you get hacked? That's a very tough question, right? Because, well, it depends what you mean by hacked, right? If someone tried to connect to that IP address to the router, there's nothing there. It's just the router. Unless there is a punch that happened, a UDP hole punching, which I talked about, which allows the port to be forwarded all the way there. When does it make sense to use indexes for pagination instead of an offset? So I made this video. Muhammad asked the question about the offset, and then this was a very good video, man, because the comment section is amazing. You guys are so amazing. You, I didn't say this enough. I mean, in 2020, guys, I learned so much from you because the engagement, the questions you ask, do not underestimate that, because any question you ask just triggers a bunch of responses from other people. People in the community, and you make all of us get better. So if you have a question, ask it, right? Because all of these questions are challenging. None of them are easy. And there are no stupid questions. So yeah, we were talking about the offset, right? And the offset, there was a lot of good discussions on this and how you're going to do this better. Some people say, okay, I can afford to do an offset because guess what? My ID is a GUID, is a UUID. I'm sorry, Hussein, I can't use an ID. I can't use a date. I don't have a date field. Yeah, some chances, like, you cannot do it. You have to use an offset. You have to just to pray, I guess, that your users will not go all the way to page number 103 and pull 200,000 rows. And in your case, Mohammed, I think you had 100,000 rows. What's the worst case? Ask yourself this question. What's the worst case? If people go to the last page, how many rows are being pulled? How long that does that query do? Actually go to the SQL prompt and do that. Tariq says, when is the RTMP video coming? What do you think of the Ethereum protocol? Man, this is two different questions. RTMP, I sort of researched that a little bit. It's in the research mode now. So I researched RTMP, and there's another one, which is the open source. The RTMP, I believe the flash, the closed source one, right? Isn't that? So yeah, streaming is another thing I'm going to look at in 2021. Ooh, guys, we have a lot of good questions. Dominique says, hi, Sam. Thank you very much for your WebSocket course. I plan on developing a soft real-time communication system. Do you think WebTransport QuickTime is stable enough to use? No, it's not ready. WebTransport is not ready. It's not going to be ready anytime soon, I think. It's going to take time. They're still drafting it. But yeah, I think it's going to replace WebSockets, in my opinion. If it's that Dominique, that does not mean do not use WebSockets, obviously, right? You can use it. Right? You can still use it. And you can switch later, right? And it really depends, like, does the web, and I made a video about this, does the quick transport solve the problem? First of all, the quick transport handles specific problem in WebSockets. Ask yourself, do you have these problems today? And they are, believe me, they are not a lot of us have this problem, except the gamers. If you guys who build gaming apps will see how WebSocket really perform in high demanding games, right? Because especially with low latency, you want lower latency than that. And then they want, gamers, they don't play with these protocols, WebSockets and all that stuff. Real gamers, they play with UDP. And the problem, UDP is not exposed directly through the web, the web restricted model, right? Unless in WebRTC. That's why a lot of game developers, they use WebRTC as a vehicle to use UDP, which is clever because WebRTC is built on top of UDP, right? So they build a fancy, not peer-to-peer, they build a peer that acts like a server. Genius. You see these game developers. That's why I respect game developers because it is very tough to architect a game. Right, and I tried the video, the WebRTC, the WebSocket video. I tried to, and I still barely scratched the surface. It's a big, big, big field. All game network uses really low level transport. That's true. I think a lot of them use voice over IP for voice, which is exactly right. Which is the WebRTC, part of WebRTC. Is that SIP protocol, whatever it's called? You should do a video on this, Hussein. On which one? On the streaming? I've been talking about a lot of stuff. Sorry. Brian Technician. How WebSocket will impact IoT? Publish subscribe model. Let's think about that a little bit. Boy, you guys ask tough questions. I love it. So IoT, like think about it. Like, again, I'm not aware of the IoT platform, but if I want to build one, I'm going to think about what low latency, low power protocol should I use on my IoT device? I think HTTP2 could not be the answer there. gRPC is an overkill, in my opinion, because it uses HTTP2. HTTP1 is beautiful because, like, think about it. Like, it's a The IoT device just sends one thing, right? It's not going to send multiple things. So you don't need multiplexing per se. I always think about it this way. Like, why would I need multiplexing if I'm going to send one thing? So HTTP 1 is enough, cheap, and really efficient for this, for using this. So if I want to send, because what do you want to do, right, with IoT? You want to log, I don't know, temperature or whatever, right? So give me an endpoint where I can send as much as possible. I don't want to worry about streams and multiplexing, and that costs CPU, which costs power, which kind of lower the life of the IoT device. I might be wrong. I'm making stuff up sometimes. Right? Again, I did not work with this stuff, but I'm just theorizing here. It's all theory. And you can agree or disagree with me. Da-da-da-da. Why not use MQTT for IoT? It's lightweight enough. Yeah, I mean, there are, again, you can use anything if you want to. Like when I said HTTP, it's a request response, right? The use case that I put was it's unidirectional where the IoT device only emits stuff, doesn't really take commands, if that makes sense, right? But if you want a publish-subscribe model where it's subscribed to something, publishes and then subscribe for events, then you need some sort of other message subscription, right? So MQTT is one of them, right? One protocol, advanced message queue protocol, which is RabbitMQ can do that trick. That, again, that has multiplexing, right? Advanced message queue protocol has multiplexing. I mean, if you don't use multiplexing, that's good. Because it has channels. And if it has one channel, I guess that's not a big deal. Again, guys, I might be over-engineering here, right? It might work, but like it depends like how much can you squeeze, how much power you want to squeeze. And thinking about this is very interesting. Omang says, thoughts on Elixir Erlang. These are badass languages. I mean, Erlang, WhatsApp is built on Erlang, right? And one of the best features in Erlang as a language is, was it called code replace? Was it called hot code replacement? Where we have a running process and you can all of a sudden replace part of the process with a new code. Why does my hair look like that? You might say, what's so big deal about that? Guys, if you want to update software, how do you do it? You compile or you interpret if you're interpreted language. And then you have to stop the current processes and you start the next processes, right? Simple example, right? Take Nginx proxy reloading policy, right? Let's say there are 7 worker threads in Nginx running, I guess, processes. Nginx called them processes. And all of them have the current Nginx configuration. Let's say, I don't know, you added a new backend. Is that what it's called in Nginx? It's not called backend. It's called upstream, I believe. You added a new upstream server. Right? How would you tell Nginx that there is a new configuration? You do dash S reload, right? And you do dash S reload. Nginx is instructing all the processes to gracefully shut down and is going to spin up a new process with the new configuration. And then slowly the others die, right? Why? Just because we could not do a hot update on the process itself with the new change. Erlang has that feature, which is nuts, right? It can just change part of the code and make it something else while the process is running. I know, mind blowing. So yeah, Erlang is awesome. Again, guys, there's so many languages and it depends. What do you want to pick? Pick one, run with it. Don't overthink it. Depends what you're trying to do. I mean, I think we're running into this programming language paralysis. Really, just pick any language that you feel comfortable with and then boo, run with it. What do you think about Discord using WebRTC over WebSockets. I thought, did they move to WebSockets, Tariq? I thought they were using WebRTC alongside WebSockets. Last time I made the video about them, unless there is a new article that I don't know about. Is there a new article? Did they move to WebRTC fully? Because last time I made a video about Discord, their architecture, they had a WebSocket channel, and alongside it has the WebRTC channel. That's the last time I remember it. Have you used Erlang? I have not. Was it good for? I just talked about Erlang a little bit, which is one of the major features in WhatsApp actually uses Erlang. I don't know what to pick languages. There are so much languages, and I am comfortable with C#, which is my main language that I started with was VB.net. And I know, guys, you can laugh if you want, right? Okay, you won't hurt my feeling. And so VB.net and C# is just very easy for me to adopt, right? I learned PHP and VB.net at the same time, because guess what? In the old days, before ASP.NET, we couldn't write that code in VB.NET and make it run on the server. We had to use PHP, right? Then when ASP, or you can use this ASP, the VB script, ugly language, right? So I use PHP, I learned PHP for the server, I learned VB.NET on the client as a desktop app, and then I communicate between the two to build apps, right? It's like, there is a reason to learn something. Now, I look at Python being running on the back end, and I it blows my mind. That's why I made my video, my course on Python on the back end, because a lot of people take this for granted. It's like, what does that mean? Python on the back end. Someone decided to execute Python as a backend application that accepts requests. And it's not really rocket science. They just made it listen on a, they built a web server that learns to talk HTTP using Python. And voila, you have a Python web server, a Python backend. And then JavaScript didn't have a vehicle like Python. It didn't have a runtime. So I got to get his name right. Who's the name? Node.js creator. What's his name? Ryan Dahl. So Ryan Dahl says, I love JavaScript as a language, and I want to write the libraries that I'm using in the front, and I want to use them in the server. Why can't I do this? So he built a runtime that is you can use on the server. You can, and what does that mean? Server. It's the same thing. It's just you spin up a process that listens, that have the ability to execute on top of V8, which is the JavaScript engine on Chrome. These are the people who change the world because they want to do something and they do it. So languages do not matter unless you're really going into, you're running into a wall. Let's give you an example where languages actually matter and you have no choice but to actually change. I'm going to give you a good example. Have you guys heard about Linkerd? I talked about this many times in the channel. You might be sick of this example. Linkerd is a service mesh built using Java, right? And service mesh, if you don't know, is a proxy. It's a sidecar proxy that sits next to your application so that it communicates to other services on behalf of your application, because as Mehdi, we talked about that in the beginning. Microservices is not easy to implement because communication between one service to another service, you think it's just a HTTP request, but no. What if that request fails? What if you want to retry? What if you want to upgrade to HTTP2? What if you want to secure the connection? You have to do all that stuff. You have to listen, and you have to create a mutual TLS and create a certificate. You can. Linkerd says, hey, don't worry about it. Just talk to us on your loopback, and we're going to do all this stuff for you. We're going to talk to you. We're going to control the security. We're going to control like what service can talk to which service, all that jazz. Linkerd was built originally in Java because, guess what? They know Java. Let's use Java. They didn't overthink it. Build it with Java. There's the whole thing. Few years into the project, says, oh, shit. Java is taking a lot of memory for our application. And we need to spin up a lot of those services. Those proxies, right? Imagine telling a client, a customer, saying, hey, by the way, you have to run two instances side by side for each of your application. One. As a proxy and a reverse proxy, right? All of a sudden, oh, you need this much memory. All of a sudden, you have increased the resources because it takes like, 200 megs or 100 megs to run in one of those JVMs. So they said, this thing won't scale. We need to rewrite this thing either with C++ or something that is not garbage collecting, right? So there are two problems. The problem is the size of the JVM, the running size compared to the app. They want to make it smaller. The second problem is the garbage collector. The garbage collector was a problem because a proxy caches a lot of stuff. It makes a lot of cache. It writes a lot to memory. And the moment you write a lot of memory, you write a lot to the memory, you have with a lot of memory footprint. All of a sudden, if you decided to discard the variable, the pointer no longer points to your beautiful memory that you allocate. Java is a garbage collected language. So it says, wait a second. I need to clean this. Exclusive lock. Wait. Bzzz. Nobody touches anything. Hey, guys. Stop. It takes the request. It tells the request to stop. Stop. And all of a sudden, the request stops. Pauses. Because the garbage collector is start cleaning, sweeping things up. It's just sweeping. It just starts sweeping. Cleaning. Java start cleaning. And the poor client is waiting for a request. It's like, what the heck? I'm making a request. And all of a sudden, out of 10,000 requests, the request is taking 500 milliseconds to execute. Because this is hard to find, guys. You got to think about that. It's like, how the heck did they find that? It takes good engineers. That's why you have to understand how Lol have loved how he takes the exclusive lock. That's how they take it. Yeah. And yeah, that's why it just takes time, takes pauses. The garbage collection pauses are the worst. Does that mean you have to worry about it as a backend engineer? Probably not. Because is your application, think about this, like, first of all, is your application memory heavy? You're putting a lot of stuff in memory, and then future requests are being posed by the garbage collector to be executed. Do you feel that? If you, then those guys had to do something about that, right? They moved to Rust eventually. Does that mean Rust is better than C++? No, it does not. They just chose Rust, and Rust was very early. And the developer, I'm following him. His name is Oliver. Man, they struggled to get Rust going. But now Rust is mature. So that was the story, one story, where they had to change a language. But do you? Do you have to worry? Now if you tell a computer science professor that you're building a JavaScript app, they're going to laugh. A lot of people say, oh, JavaScript, they know how JavaScript works. That's why they laugh. Right? But guess what? My app can be built in JavaScript and it could be really performant if I know what I'm doing. It really, really depends. But it's very, very popular. Rod says, any advice in how to start a good portfolio as a backend developer? Showcasing possible employers. Well, this is a good question. This is tough. I mean, I don't like, and here's the thing: why I say I don't like these kind of questions, because I don't have a proper answer for you. Unfortunately, why? because I was on your shoes once upon a time, and I did not have an answer to. And I'm going to lie to you. If I said, oh, just learn this and put this in your CV and everything's going to be good. No, it's hard. Let's be honest. It's very, very hard, guys. Very, very hard. Getting a job is hard. Proving that you're good is hard. Why? Because it takes time. That's why I don't say, oh, just learn this project and good, you do good. No. What I do is I give you the advice that is the long process, the tried and true, which is what I did, right? For the longest time, nobody would hire me because, like, what the heck do you know? You don't know anything, right? I mean, guys, putting that you know Python and JavaScript and PHP doesn't do anything to you, right? Putting these as your languages will not move you an inch, right? If I apply today, my CV, I will be rejected. Well, people will look at my CV and say, okay, this guy only knows C Sharp and JavaScript. Blech. Getting hired is hard. Let's be honest. I spent a lot of time in my early career getting rejected because I lacked the fundamental understanding. So the trick is just go take the long route and understand the fundamentals, be more confident. And once you get more confident, it will show in your persona. It will automatically just glow. Right? Just like putting makeup for women or men, if you're into that thing. Yeah, it will just glow with knowledge. If you talk to someone, you will immediately, people will know that you know what you're talking about, and that will get you hired, right? And the trick here is to get an interview. CVs do not work. Resumes do not work, unfortunately. Resumes are very weak. It takes a lot of time to actually sit down and get an interview. It's like to prove that someone is knowledgeable. It's very hard. Filtering and so much other stuff, right? So that's the problem with resumes, right? But I wish I have a quick answer to you, unfortunately. Just like tried and truth, learn the fundamentals, learn all these stuff and be more confident in your knowledge. Pick a language, pick a niche in the back end, and then do all what you can do to learn more about it. And then target companies that you want to work with and inside that. And don't lie. Say, I don't know a front end. I don't know about proxies. I know I'm really good in database engineering and I can get better. I can help you with this. I'm focused on this track. I'm focused on this. I don't want to learn anything else for the time being. CodeDam is on the house. One of the very few YouTube devs I know who really, really know till the bottom of things they talk about. Always pleasure to see your content. Thank you. CodeDam. Man, CodeDam just gave us a very generous, guys. I think I posted on my Twitter. They gave us a generous Node.js advanced. Even I am learning a lot of stuff in that. I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched the threading part. Thank you for putting YouTube chapter so I can skip. That threading stuff is really good, man. Make videos on microservices. I think I made two videos. Let me find them. Findo microservices. That's how I find things, by the way, guy. I type what that I'm looking for, and then I type my name, Hussein. And then the YouTube algorithm blesses me with things. By the way, guys, thank you all for your beautiful comments. And I apologize if I don't respond, because the amount of comments are insane. There's a lot of beautiful comments. There are some nasty comments, but I love the nasty. I love me some nasty. Give me some nasty. I love all that kind of comments. Bring it. Bring it, Brittany. That's another microservices video. What another microservices? microservices madness. You guys were going to love this. This is one of the people call clickbait. It's not really a clickbait because I really think microservices is a madness. So it's not really a clickbait. Any prediction for 2021? Quick will rule. Quick this. Quick will rule. Any plan for WebAssembly? I don't know. I really respect WebAssembly. The goal of WebAssembly is to defeat some unnecessary, let's call it, languages that spur as a result. And some people will know what I'm talking about. Let's not start a war. Lambda. What's Lambda? Lambda container? Lambda, you mean. Kale ask, Lambda versus container. I mean, stateless, serverless versus being container. I mean, one is built kind of on top of each other. Not necessarily. But the idea of serverless is, and guys, if you want someone expert in serverless, if you want to learn about serverless, because let's be honest, I'm not the guy to talk about serverless. I know very little about serverless. I know how it works, and that's what matters. But if you want the guy, his name is Yan Chui. What is Yan Chui? The Burning Monk. Pretty guys, I'm pretty sure you know him. The Burning Monk for your serverless needs. God dang it, where is this? My machine is so slow. Someone figured it out, Jemish. All right. So this is this guy, the Burning Monk. This guy, he used to be a game developer. That's why I respect him a lot. Doesn't mean I don't respect people who don't do game development. It's just like his effort to do engineering for games. Woo, this guy's good. And then he moved completely niched into serverless. I wish he replied to messages. He doesn't reply to my messages, unfortunately, because he has a lot of followers, right? So he doesn't see me. So I was like, I tried to, like, hey, guys. It's just like I tried to give him some love because he is really smart. So serverless, definitely Yang Shui. So what is serverless versus containers? Like, these are unfair comparison, I think. But let's be honest. Serverless cannot work effectively without a cloud, right? Because, like, what does that mean, right? Like, serverless, there is a server. Obviously, everybody knows that. That is running on top of that. The idea here is, let me manage my code and you manage the infrastructure, right? The IaaS. And the idea is, let me deploy and then you find out. So you spin up a VM, physical machine, a VM, or a container to run my code. I'm just telling you that I need a Node.js version 11.3. I need Python, Django 6.2. I'm making versions up, by the way, guys. And I need OpenSSL 1.1.1. And then that's it. And then you go and do that stuff. And instead of you doing that work, the serverless function is going to do that for you. It's going to spin up the nice architecture for you, spin up that container, and then run your function on top of that. There is lots going on there. There is a nice reverse proxy that makes that decision, right? That's the power of serverless. That's why I always say, learn how things work. Learn how serverless work. And the serverless, like, the power is really in the reverse proxy that accepts that call and then makes the decision to invoke a function or not. I predict in 2021 and in future, as we go into 2021, and serverless become more dominant as a architecture, it's really great. By the way, I believe the security flaws will show. I think we'll run into a lot of security problems with serverless, where how do you isolate two functions from two different customers, essentially building a multi-tenant serverless architecture. I believe that will happen soon. Because let's think about how this works. Everyone, my function and your function, we kind of call the same endpoint. It's going to be the same IP addresses. They're not going to reserve different IP addresses for each one of them. That doesn't scale. So that means you and I share at some point the same server to make the decision to execute our function. And I believe some nasty hacker is going to find a way to exploit that. And mark my words, today is what, January 1st? I'm going to tell you that, hey, did you remember what I said January 1st that someone is going to exploit serverless? This is what I'm going to, someone going to clip this video, part of it, and they're going to post it to the whole world. Obviously, this might not happen too. Guys, what was the name of the serverless channel, please? It's not serverless channel. It's a Yang Chui, the burning monk. He's a guy. He's really good. He has a podcast and all that jazz. If you want AppSync, I don't know what AppSync is, but this is some of the stuff he works with. So if serverless, that's your guy. Again, guys, see, here's what we do here in this channel. I don't pretend to know everything, and nobody knows everything. The idea is here, you should, as an engineer, you should follow as much people as possible. You follow me, follow CodeDam for coolish stuff. You follow Brad for coolish the front end engineering stuff. He does back end, right? But doesn't specify in the back end, right? But you follow for serverless, you follow Yang Shui for security, you follow security now. I have a recommendation, a list of channels that I recommend on my channel. Let's find it. Let's find this list and bring it to you. These are the people, the people you should follow, the people. Go here, my friends. I know it's a little bit late in somewhere, and I'm wow, 259. I think this is the most people ever streamed concurrently. So this is my channel. Scroll all the way down. You're gonna find channels I recommend. Daniel Stamberg, and these channels, by all means, they don't have millions of subscribers. Some of them have 1,000 subscribers, but I know they are good, and I only recommend to you the good stuff. So Daniel Stamberg for front-end engineering, but low-level front-end engineering, protocol, C++. You want to learn about security? That's your guy. Daniel Stamberg is the creator of Curl, if you don't know. Follow him. Follow him on Twitter. His name is, Badger on Twitter. Security now. Every backend engineer should understand security. If you want to dive deep into it, that's a different story. But security is very critical. Security now. Steve Gilbert. I butchered his last name. I'm sorry. This guy talked about security and networking. I learned all my networking stuff from this guy. I used to listen. Here's the thing. And some of you asked me, Rod asked me, how do you know that you got better as a backend engineer, as a software engineer? How do you know that you got better? How do you know? How do you know? I mean, what's the metrics? Here's the one metric. Because I didn't have an answer. A good answer. In 2018, I used to listen to Security Now, which is a podcast, and I swear I do not understand any single thing that he said. He talked about public key cryptography and some low-level NAT stuff, and I didn't understand anything. That's why I shut the podcast down, because I don't understand. So today, I can follow his train of thought, Steve Gill, because he talks slowly, which I love, because English is not my first language, so I can't understand if someone talks fast, right? And Steve talks slow, and I wasn't understanding him back in 2018. Now I follow his train of thought, and guess what? I find mistakes. I started finding mistakes, and I calling him out. which I'm very proud of, says, hey, Steve, that's wrong. That's not actually true. That's wrong. When the moment he goes out of his networking into the software stack, it's clear that Steve is not as strong as his networking fundamentals. He has low-level security and networking. If you go to the backend, start talking about reverse proxies, I can challenge him there. It's clearly that I can challenge him there, and I can understand that. But if he talks about security, I shut up, because he's the guy. He's a god. And how about Otome or Lenny? How about the other option for finding security vulnerability in serverless platforms? HTTP smuggling! You called it, son. You called it. Otome is older than me. We found that. Right. We found. He showed his age. Sorry, Otome. But yeah. HTTP smuggling. HTTP smuggling is going to happen with serverless. Steve Gibson. Thank you. Thank you. It's Steve Gibson. And Otome, please recommend all these beautiful channels. Continuing recommending people. So security now. So that's how you know that you got better. Just listening to the podcast and listening to things that you didn't understand 2 years ago and then comparing it today. Woo! I know I got better. But I tried to not get over my head. It says, okay, I'm still stupid. That's the mindset I tried to deploy. Another channel, CMU, Carnegie Mellon Database Group. Boy, Carnegie Mellon, they know their databases. Follow their, if you want to learn databases, there are smart professors there. Computer file, I forgot that. Computer file, definitely. Another one. CS50, that's a popular one. Throwing CS stuff. And keep on bringing up, guys. All that beautiful stuff. Thank you, Raphael. Appreciate you. Ghassan says, is your channel content is enough for me to start a strong career? That's a tough question. I don't believe. What it depends on what do you mean by strong. I would say the answer is no. You have to follow multiple people. Don't just follow me. Follow the people I'm talking about here. Follow as much smart people as possible. There, I talked about it. Follow Brad. Security Now, Steve Gibson. Follow Daniel Stenberg. Follow those kind of smart people to just get a lot of different opinion. Because my opinions, you might not agree with my opinions, essentially. Daniel Schaffman. Yes. Yes, I know this name. I know this name. Where did I hear this name before? Jemish, where did I hear this name before? Jemish Schaffman, where did I hear this name before? Daniel Schaffman, he's a professor. Yes, he's the professor. Yep. That's the professor. I know that name. Thank you. But yeah, don't just follow me. No. Follow all kinds of people to get different perspectives, because I have a lot of weird, strange opinions that you might not agree with. Like, I don't use React, and most of you do, right? And I don't agree that you should use framework, right? I always like to use low-level things, right? Unless you actually understand them, then I am willing to actually use those tools and frameworks, right? A lot of different opinions, so we might agree or disagree with my opinions, like whether to use a certain protocol over the other or certain mindset, right? That's why you have to listen to multiple people and make your own opinion, your own. That's the idea here. And everyone is entitled for their own opinion, essentially. Right? And that's how you form your, you listen to multiple people and then you make your own decision. How to gain discipline to learn all this stuff? Sometimes it's overwhelming. Yeah, Rod, it is overwhelming. Let's be honest. Let's be honest. Software engineering is not easy. It is very overwhelming, guys. Should I punish myself every time that I reach my phone? No, not that bad. I mean, I would say, because I struggle with the same thing, because sometimes I wake up and I say, I'm not in the mood to learn anything today. And then I feel bad, but I become more disciplined. And what I do in this case, when I get this situation, because I do, guess what? It's a mountain, especially when I go to Twitter, I get overwhelmed because there are a lot of people way good, way better than me. And they start tweeting about things that I have no idea about. And I get kind of this imposter syndrome. It's like, maybe I don't know shit, right? And that kind of hurts. It's like, okay, maybe I've been doing all this stuff and I still don't understand anything. And I claim that I make videos about this stuff and I don't understand all that thing. It gets to your head, right? So what I do in this situation is like, I try to make an execution, a single execution every day, no matter how small. And then I reward myself. I talked about that in one of my videos, right? I said, you know what? I'm going to read a paragraph about one thing that is interesting. And Otome Lini actually sent me a lot of articles that I read about. This guy's like, he's on 24/7. It's like, I'm so jealous. This guy's always learning all the time. And he's like, and I get jealous. Like, oh my God, this guy's learning and I'm not. So he's kind of pushing me to get better as well. So I try to do one execution every day. One. And once I'm done, I put it down and I go play video games. I'm not gonna pull you the Gary V approach, which I disagree with. It's like you have to work from 7 until 6 and then from 7 to 2 a.m. Jeez, what? I don't have a life? No, I'm not like that. I enjoy my life. I go to restaurants, I go to coffee shops, I go out, I play, I have fun, video games, all that jazz, spend time with the family, because you have a life after that. Unless, let's be honest, if you're serious to become really good at this, then you have to spend more time in this. And the amount of time I started spending this compared to 2018 was way more than this time. I would say every day I allocate, let's say maybe 4 hours of learning. And these are spread, right? Maybe I'll open an article and read about something and it's going to take me 20 minutes to read. Maybe I'm going to listen to a podcast and that's a 40-minute podcast in the background while walking my dog. Maybe this is another tweet that spark a curiosity which made me search, and then all of a sudden learn something like that. Like the offset thing, it was Lenny's idea, which is Otome, the genius guy that talk about that answers all the questions on the comment section. He asked, like, by the way, you might be interested in the offset idea. I saw that article last year, I believe, and I didn't pay attention to it. It's like, you know what? I just forgot about it. But then it's like, it sparked curiosity. So I spent 2 days, one full day on and off reading about it. And the next day making the video, posted, felt good. So it's hard. It's very, very hard. Tankai Basak, thank you for becoming a member. Welcome to the designer group. Wow. We have beautiful members. Did you ever read about the SimJacker vulnerability? I have not, Raphael. What is that? Please see, I'm starting a web app hoping to make it big. Like Facebook. I should have scalability in mind since the beginning, or should I focus on the quickly product market? Again, this is an unpopular opinion. Get your app a minimum viable product running first, and answer what is the question you're trying to answer, and focus on that, right? Why would you want to build another social media app? What does it solve, right? Because if you're building it for fun, knock yourself out. But if you're building it to actually compete, it's very hard. Okay, how are you possibly going to compete with Facebook? Their resources, their engineers are so working 24/7 to make this project better, and they are way ahead of us. Kale says, the best thing about Hussein Nasr's channel is that he is open, honest, and stick to basic fundamentals. Make it easy to connect. Connect the dots in the knowledge tree. Thank you so much. And I believe these are the dots that I connect myself, because, again, I don't like to use tools to build software without understanding how those tools work. And a lot of people disagree with that. So it's like, what? You use tools to help you achieve your goal. And I disagree with that. You have to understand how this works if you want to take pride as a software engineer. If you don't have any passion to software engineering and it's a 9-to-5 job to you, that's a different answer, right? That's a completely different thing. I am passionate about engineering. That's why I dive deep into that, try to push the fundamentals as bold as possible, which is hard. Ghassan says, Salam Hussein, I just ended a CS degree and I feel lost in which direction I should go. I think a lot about DevOps and should go for AWS, Azure certification or path on how to exceed in it. So I don't have experience about DevOps. I believe a lot of people in the community have DevOps. But again, the beauty about the DevOps and the full stack engineering is that you're going to taste different things. And that's something I changed my mind. I was against full stack engineering and DevOps until recently, where I changed my mind, because yeah, guess what? I change my mind all the time. And DevOps is really great to start with, in my opinion, because you can start tasting different things. You're going to go to the front end and the back end and the back end back in the database and the operation. You're going to do a lot of stuff. I was a DevOps engineer for a little bit. I wasn't really called DevOps back then, but essentially it's just you're everywhere, which makes you taste different things until you will feel lost. Like, what do I do? Look at what exactly you are gravitated towards and pick that as a result. There's so much, and there's so much shiny things. Stick to whatever you think is good. Focus on basic thing. Basic, boring tech. Boring tech work. Boring tech works. Any book or YouTube channel recommendation for design pattern? Design pattern. What's that guy name? Tech Dummies? Yes. That guy stopped posting, man. Tech Dummies. Naresh, I think his name is Naresh. Yeah, he didn't post anything in 6 months. Too bad. I really liked his videos. I mean, he's getting a lot of views, too. He liked it. His topics are great. He talked about bitmap indexing. Talked about Yelp system designs and cloud storage. Check him out. Tech Dummies. This guy's good. And I only recommend you the good stuff. But alas, unfortunately, he stopped posting. Ahmed Khudar says, in Arabic, I'm going to translate it. Hayallah Shabab, kul am wa antum bkhair, says, hey guys, Happy New Year. Hi from Chile, Carlos, what is up? Job Skills Share Community. I am not a developer, but your content is also helping IT professional. Thank you. Thank you so much for the super chat. Appreciate it. I'm glad the content helps. And thank you for sharing your knowledge. Agile Scrum. I always do Agile. How are you guys doing? How is everybody doing? Martin Fowler. Martin Fowler is a guy. I've been watching his content for a long time. I mean, reading his books, at least. Martin Fowler. I have lots of his books. Just a sec. I swear I saw his book. Wait a second. Dang it, I don't see it. What is it? I had a book, his not this one. Oh my god. The book will fall. Bookcase will fall. Bookcase will fall. Bookcase will fall. Book, yeah. Refactoring and improving design of code, existing code. That's a good book for refactoring code. That's a low-level book, but it's good. There's another book, Enterprise Applications, which I don't know where it is. Maybe I left it in Bahrain. The book next to it is Nassim Taleb, The Black Swan, which is pretty good too. What was the channel for the guy, the pattern? Didn't I paste it? Tech Dummies. Paste. His name is Naren, and I'm pretty sure some of you might know him. He stopped posting for a long time. There is another guy that, what's his name? Brad had in his channel, and he's like a design pattern guy too. I mean, I did a design pattern videos, guys, way back in 2016, and excuse my accent or English to be specific, because my English was terrible back then. Not that it's any good right now, but what is it? It was like an object-oriented design pattern. Lane programming, is that one? Yep. I built like a pizza app, and I explained to you like the design pattern, and I use VB.NET, so excuse me for using VB.NET for that. But it's just like learning programming with object-oriented. It's a very beginning. I used many design patterns to build this pizza ordering system. You might enjoy it. I just shared it. Can Node.js socket handle 10,000 users chatting at once? Chatting. So let's think about that. Node.js handling 10,000 users. Look, don't think about Node.js. Think about the process at the back end. So the process in the Node.js app is listening on a port. Let's say this is port 80. And each user will establish a TCP connection to your back end. And I forgot what Node.js model is, but it is, I believe it's multi-threaded. So each, again, this goes down how complicated web servers and other servers are. Like Nginx spins up a thread for each connection, and so does Envoy. I don't know what Node.js does, but let's assume it's a thread per connection, or it's a thread pool. CodeDAM actually showed that at one point. CodeDAM. So there's a thread pool that four thread by default, I believe, and the Node.js is responsible to serve four 10,000 connection, right? Each connection needs a time slice from this thread pool. So you need to know what's the limit, right? You can increase the thread pool, but that only buys you so much, right? Again, you're talking about not just one connection, multiple requests. It's different. You said 10,000 users. That's different than 10,000 requests. Completely different. 10,000 users means 10,000 unique connections that each might send 5 requests at a time. Or maybe 1,000 of those are idle. Right. So yeah, I know single Node.js is single threaded, but I could swear that I saw that it's there is a thread pool somewhere. Do you add that as a plugin to enable multi-threading? I know it's a single threaded and it uses threading to write I/O, but I'm not sure in the front end. It must be a plugin that I may have missed, right? So that's why I'm not sure. Let me know. Correct me, guys, if I said anything stupid when it comes to that thing. Rafael says, Node is a single threaded but spins threads to execute async. Okay. That's the thing. So it spins multiple threads, and there is a limit to number of threads it spins to serve those connections. So we need to read, apparently we need to read up about this, guys. Right? We need to read up and educate ourselves, at least myself, about this. We need to educate about ourselves about that. We need to. That's good. That's good. Good topics. So yeah, 10,000 connection. What I would do is, if I know that my server cannot handle it, I'm going to spin up multiple servers. Azim says, thoughts on ORM frameworks. Completely against. Again, this is my personal opinion. You can disagree. I do not like to use frameworks when it comes to things that I know how to write. I don't like magic. In this channel, we don't like magic. ORM does magic. I do not like magic. Right, it just does its own things and object relational model and hides black boxes. No, not for me. So I like to write raw SQL because I can control that. That's why GraphQL is good, but using GraphQL as a black box is a slippery slope. Right, you can use ORM if you know what is it doing. Right, because you're just adding another layer on top of another layer. Because guess what, guys? You're talking to the database, which in itself is a black box. It's doing its own execution plan, and I'm good with that. But I need to understand what the database is doing when I execute a raw SQL. Now you're telling me I need to use an ORM layer that abstract even more stuff? That just blindside engineers. Like, what is going on? I don't know anything. That's why I do not like to use ORMs that hides this thing. It's a black box to me. I don't like magic. I don't like black box. I need, and I, very important to understand how things work. David, hi from Venezuela. I've been doing something with WebSockets and session authentication with Go, but response time for my backend application range from 1 to 4 seconds. Yikes, that's a lot. Even without the DB access, what could it be? So you need to really diagnose what is causing that delay. 4 seconds is a lot. You might have, like, it depends, like, how many connections do you have? Like, simplify the problem. Can you reproduce this with a single threaded app, a single connection? Can you reproduce the 4 seconds? See where the time is spent. Remove the other factors, because you might be in, there might be a maximum number of thread that you might hit, and that kind of causes a pause. I'm not going to even talk about garbage collection. I really doubt that it's a garbage collection that gives you that much. I think it's a thread pool. That's a block as a result. That could be any reason, really. We need to see what's going on. Again, guys, the ORM is completely my opinion. If you want to use it, go ahead and use it. I personally don't like to use stuff that hides my application. I like to execute raw SQL, and I like to talk to the database directly, right? As a developer, as an engineer, I need to understand what's going on. I need to understand all of these stuff. ORM adds complexity. But that's just me. Feel free to disagree. in the comment section, and you might have a good use case. Our CTO wants us to build our own custom framework for the next project. How to tell him that this is the worst idea ever? ISCO, it might not be the worst idea. I mean, if you're building your own framework, you will have a lot to learn. This is a good opportunity, in my opinion. Like, it depends. What is that framework? Is it a backend framework? The web server? It's you gotta convince him that it's a lot of work. And would you rather invest that work to build your own framework to so that it becomes solves a little problem? Did the CTO did the research and spent the time, investing the time to research all the frameworks and found a little bit of limitation in those frameworks? That's why he or she is doing the custom framework? There must be a reason behind all that stuff. Is it possible to profile each step of the SQL? Yeah, definitely. You can do a SQL trace in the database. That's tough, yeah, building a custom framework. Hussein, I got to use Neo4j, and I really like it. Ooh, how is it? Is it good? I heard about it. I heard good stuff about this. What type of VPN tunnel do you prefer? Good old SSH tunneling. And if you were talking about an actual VPN, I mean, I used Express once. I don't really use a VPN much. I mean, unless if I want to do something to hide my public IP address or to access something. But I didn't hear really need to do that. I might consider to do that for videos, just to hide my IP address and when I make the videos. I mean, not that showing the public IP address people will hack me or anything like that. My router is configured so that it says I have three dumb routers. That's Steve Gibson's recommendation. So even if you can't get in, there is nothing open, right? So if you know the IP addresses, that doesn't give you much information. Do you think PHP Laravel is useless nowadays? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, Facebook is built on PHP. That's why. Look, we should really not overhype languages, right? Just because languages are not used doesn't mean they're bad. It's just, I guess, fashion, most likely. Most of the languages are there is just fashion. I talked in the beginning of the live stream about really the... when do you actually change a language? F sharp? I have not used F sharp at all. Yeah. How about Django? Django's good. Django is Express to me, right? Express, see, I'm not against frameworks, guys. I mean, I use Express, but I know how Express works. That's why I use it. And I know what it does exactly, right? So I use that. Django is the Express for Python, right? It solves a lot of, it does a lot of work for you that you don't have to write from scratch. That's a valid reason to use. But I am against using frameworks and technologies that you don't understand how it works. It just does something and whoa, works. You have to understand, because one day you will run into a bug and you will be completely clueless because you don't know how things work under the hood. And that's the thing I try to avoid because I've been there. Hello, Mr. Hussein. Zair said, I watched your recent video on every backend engineer should know UDP and TCP proxy. Would that be a great step in the right direction from a career? Yes. If you want to get into backend engineering, or engineering, you should know TCP and UDP and how they work. This is a very basic networking concept that is not exclusive for networking. Because as a backend engineer, you will be connected to from front end. And how? It's either TCP or UDP. Most probably is going to be all the time TCP. 2021 is going to start to be UDP through Quick. But if you don't know how this initial connection work, how can you progress your career? That's the basic fills, but that's the first line of defense, the TCP connection. So it's very, very critical. Yeah, so there is a lot of Flask is Python's Express and not Django. What? Lucas? That's new. What is Flask? Sheesh. See, I don't know much. I don't know Python. The only servers that I built on top of Python was Tornado, which is a low-level web server. That's the bare metal Python server that I built. I did not use Flask. I think Flask is the Express, huh? All right, might be wrong. I'll take your word for it. What is Django then? What's the difference between Django and Flask? Sheesh, man. So many frameworks. No wonder engineers get confused. Everybody's getting confused with all these much tools. How about a networking full tutorial? Maybe when I get better at networking. C++ replacement? Why would we need to replace C++, Alex? It's good. How would you horizontally scale a posters DB? What is a posters DB? You scale DB horizontally with two approaches. First, you scale it horizontally in the same instance using partitioning. And then you scale it, it's called horizontal partitioning. So that's in the same instance. Break the table into multiple smaller tables so that the indexes you hit are smaller, so that seek time are faster. And then the other scaling is through replication. The second layer is through replication, where you have multiple read replicas and one master, I guess, replica that pushes the writes, the wall writes, to all of those beautiful. That's 70 show. And you push all these to a horizontal, and then you make your backend app reads from these backend, the replicas. So that's another one. And the final one, which is my least favorite, is sharding. Django is a French gypsy guitarist. Wow. I really don't know. I thought I saw the movie Django Unchained. That's where I thought Django came from. Sorry, Miss Postgres. Okay, yes. So Postgres, yeah, we answered this question. So Postgres is that. Thank you for the free database course. Shahrayar. Oh, beautiful name. Shahrayar. That's a beautiful name. Afwan Shahrayar. So yeah, I made the database course for free for 3 days. And that's the limit for Udemy, by the way. And you guys loved it. I'm really, really happy that you guys are enjoying these courses. How to become a hacker at IDF? Barbara asks. I don't know what IDF is. What is IDF? You will see that I don't know much stuff, guys. And Israel Defense Forces. Ooh, okay, all right. Oh, I'm not going to answer that. I have no clue. All right. Django is a Python framework with a built-in web server, basically. Thank you, Rafael. So in Express, you specify, you create a server, and then you add routes, essentially, right? So say, I want to listen on a get, and call this function when someone calls get, call this function when someone called post, whatever, right? So you're saying Django comes in with a built-in web server. Is it like very similar to Apache? Like, hey, all of a sudden you spin up a Django web server, and then you serve static files. Is that it? Do you have any other courses planned? Not really. What is your favorite breakfast cereal? I love these questions. Now, okay, we a little bit. My brain is frying from engineering questions. My breakfast cereal. I gotta say, colleagues, the tiger. What's his name? Tony, the tiger, the blue tiger, the frosty cornflakes, the one with sugar. I forgot what it's called. I don't eat cereal anymore. But that was my favorite. Sultan asks, hello, Hussein. Is it true only 7% of all traffic is hosted on a cloud? And do you think this percentage will increase exponentially? I don't know about that percentage, to be honest. I think it should be more, to be honest. But yeah, it gets easier and easier to spin up things on the cloud. And that's where things hit it. That means those companies, Amazon, will need really adept and good engineers to manage those things. This is not going to end by just... We're making the life of developer easier by... Let's say we're making the life of front-end engineers easier by shifting everything to the cloud. But still, back-end engineers and edge engineers are still responsible to manage that goddamn thing right on the back-end, right? So yeah, the front-end engineers take all the value by having to rely on a cloud-managed architecture, right? Which is, they still have to do a lot of heavy lifting on the front-end. It's not easy by any means, right? Front-end engineering is really, really tough. Right, to get really good on front-end engineering. I'm talking about performance. Look at Chrome. Chrome is a front-end app, right? It's the second biggest app after curl, I think, right? As a browser, that's the toughest app you can build. Curl, that's a front-end app. But do you know how much work that goes into a front-end that is like curl? That's a lot of work. So front-end is not easy. Back-end is not easy. Nothing is easy. Have you watched Bahrain Grand Prix? It's been a while. Last time I've been to a Grand Prix in Bahrain was, 2014? We go every year, I think. It goes every year. It started in 2004, and I think we've went in almost every single one of them. Up until 2015, when I left, obviously. Mine is cinnamon toast crunch. Nice. Please talk about WebAssembly. In the future, when I know. What's your take on working for Fang? Is it not something for you? No, it is something for me, of course. I mean, working for big companies is really good thing because, and it really depends what you do for those companies, right? If you're doing menial tasks, then it's boring as hell. But the goal, if I decided to go for one of those big companies, I'm comfortable where I'm in right now. But if I do, I want to dive deep into the guts of how those guys build those stuff. I'm so interested to work with smart people that build the technology that we're using. Like, how the heck Netflix built that incredible architecture? I have no idea. It's not public. So me working for this, I'll be super excited to work there. Not that there's stupid food and whatever all that stuff. And the salaries are not that different from where I work, right? So these are not something that interests me. What interests me is the tech, is the engineering, and working with people. And I have that where I am working right now in Israel. I'm working with smart, incredible engineers. So as long as I have that, I'm not going anywhere. I need to be... Here's the thing I think my dad told me. It's like, if you are the smartest, if you think you're the smartest person in the room, then you are in the wrong room. He must have stole this quote from someone. He didn't say that, but I translated from Arabic, but if you're the smartest person in the room, you are just in the wrong room. You should not be in a room where you know the most. No, you should just be in a room where you're always challenged. And I am in my current company. I consider myself I don't know anything compared to those guys. Those guys like have 20, 30, 40 years career. And when they talk, they know what they're talking about. So you respect their opinions, right? And boy, this is the best thing an engineer can ask for. It's just like smart companions, smart colleagues. Because you can learn so much. And boy, I'm learning so much every single day. I go to work and I've been challenged with a new task. And then I just push to the limit. It's like, hey, go find why is this? And this is where you excel, because it's always you have to raise your bar, right? If you're comfortable with what you're working with, then you're not going to evolve. You're not going to get better. But the moment you start hitting some bumps, that's like, okay, this is clearly something you don't know. And here's something I used to do back 15 years ago, 14, 10 years ago. What I try to sound smart, which is something extremely stupid. Don't try to sound smart. Why? What's the goal? Right? If you don't know something, just say, I don't know. And how many answers? You guys ask a lot of good questions. How many times I said, I don't know? A lot. Because I don't know. Django, I don't know what Django is, to be honest. Right? I don't know. I just say, I don't know. I would make an assertion, as Seth Godin will say, like, hey, I don't know what that is, but I think it's this way because of this. I am not afraid to make assertions. I would say it might be like this because of this. It might be like this because of this. It might be like this because of this. And I love making these assertions. And now I'm wrong most of the time. That's the attitude you have to have. Like, to get better. I'm sorry. That was the Alison, your question about Fang, but I know I went in tangent. How do you keep track of your thoughts and what you are learning? Do you have a developer journal? Yes, I do. I do. I have a journal. It's in my note app in this Mac, and it syncs up in my iPhone. So anything, Otto may send me all these great articles. If I'm interested in it, I'll add it to the list, right? I say, hey, okay, I'm going to learn this. I'm going to learn this. It's not clean by any means, but when I read through this list, I say, oh, this is something nice. Let me do it today. This is something nice. I'll wake up every day, and Rod asks this question, how do you get motivated? Sometimes I don't feel motivated. It's just how life is. You can't feel 100% all the time. It's impossible. Sometimes you wake up and you're feeling down. That's why I push myself to do something, even something small. And I know you guys might not like this, but sometimes I post like a 60-second video, short. Do you love this? Let me type in the chat if you like this stuff, the short videos that I used to do. Because posting a 60-second, 59-second about a thought, talking about a topic, and I summarize it in 59 seconds is very, very difficult. And I get a lot of backlash from you guys. Some people love it. Some people extremely hate it because they say, hey, you cannot talk about HTTP2 in 59 seconds. You forgot to mention this, and you forgot to mention this, and this, and this, and this. It's like, sheesh, okay, guys. Ooh, you guys are serious. But I love to make these videos. Oh, yeah, you seem to love it. But these 60-second videos, if I make something, it just makes me feel motivated. It's like, oh, I did something today. Seth Godin, guys, if you don't know, Seth Godin is like most of his books. I have all his books. Seth Godin, where is this guy? Let's talk about Seth Godin a little bit. So Seth Godin, if you just type Seth Godin or just type Seth in Google, dude, Seth Godin is. I learned about Seth Godin in 2008, and he changed my life because he had the idea of writing a blog every day. Happy New Year, Noah. The Kubernetes expert is in town. Kubernetes expert, they are in town, babes. Look at that. Noah Williams. If you want anything about Kubernetes, follow this guy. So yeah, let's continue talking about Seth. So Seth, in 2008, right? And I started reading his books and his blogs, and he writes a blog every day since 1995. Can you imagine the dedication, the discipline to write a blog every day? That is just nuts. And I did not do a blog every day, but he taught me to write, at least just, hey, write something. And I started writing. I started my blog in 2009, and that got me writing about what I know back then was ArcObject and ArcGIS geospatial analysis. That's by the way, that's my specialty, geoanalysis and geospatial databases, right? Israeli technology. And then I started writing blogs, and some company in the UK said, hey, you know about this technology. We want you to write a book. A book? What the heck is a book? We want you to write a book. All right. And it's like, yeah. So my wife said, I said, like, why? I don't know anything about writing books. She said, what are you going to lose? What are they going to do? What's the worst case that's going to happen? I don't know. That people are going to make fun of me, and then I'm going to write a book and that nobody will read. So yeah, so what? So I accepted the offer and I wrote my first book, and it was very well known in the community. And then I wrote the second book, and then I wrote the third, and then I wrote the fourth, and then I wrote the fifth, and then I wrote the six books because of that blog, the idea to write, to start something. Who would have thought? And then I'm taking that discipline. It's just the idea from Seth is just, and his new book is called The Practice, by the way. He just published that, and he's going in every single podcast and talking about it now. Just post, do something every day, whether it's a tweet, whether it's a useful, meaningful tweet, whether it's a blog, whether do something about what you like. And that's what I try to do. I've been doing this for 2020. I almost post daily. Almost. A lot. I posted a lot of videos. Some of those videos, so I think you're going to like it. So I'm going to post, if I don't have content, I'm going to post a 60-second video. So that might feel a little bit spammy. So, sumimasen. Sorry. Who for Kubernetes, he said? Noah Williams. Domain. Yeah, for Kubernetes. I don't know anything about Kubernetes. I know very little. And they are the guys. They are your guys for this. Noah Williams. All right, so yeah. Man, we shared a lot of cool stuff. Man, look at that. Yeah, they're spamming Noah. Noah's being spammed. All right. Guys, it was fun. This was fun. This is fun. Thank you so much. Jose, maybe this. What is this? What's going on here? Azure. The C4 model is another model that I tried. And I don't know. I don't know about that, but I still prefer. It might work for some of you, the C4 architecture, the four C's, right? I forgot what they stand for. But I still prefer writing, just writing. Do you watch Enemy? Every single day. Have you thought about opening a Discord channel? I have a Discord channel. I have a Discord. Where is Discord? Where's Discord? Nope. Where's Discord? Gotta find Discord. The Discord link. We have genius engineers on the Discord channel, and they are discussing stuff that are so interesting every single day. I think it's in my description. There you go, found it. Join our thriving Discord channel. Join our channel, guys. Join it. Join the channel. Join the Discord channel. Dior. That's a different... Damn it. Okay. How do you manage notes about engineering topics? Literally opening the notes app. And there is in what is it called? This thingy? This iCloud? The default note app, which every single YouTuber apologizes for, right? When they posted a tweet with an apology, it's always a screenshot of a notes app. you just basically, I create a new note and write a title. My God, Ayuni Moshfia. Oh, my eyes. Ugh. By the way, I don't know if you noticed, guys, but for those who are asking, I don't have a channel, but I have a website. He has a website. He talked about Kubernetes in his Twitter most of the time and his website. And he wrote some blogs about Kubernetes. If you have any Kubernetes question, do that. Noah, this puts you on the spot to start creating content, my friend. You should share your knowledge. Which book you prefer, a basic knowledge of networking? There was a book about fundamentals of networking. I forgot what it's called. I got it. I love that you got the pop culture context from the not app. Of course. Oh, God. Discordodesca. Yes, so. Any video on API Canary test? I think I made one. Canary deploymento. I need to make a video about this. I have one video on Canary deployment. If you search Canary deployment, I think my first videos show up. Huh. How about that? This is an old video. Let me share this. Canary deployment. Yeah, this is actually interesting. So this is back when, this is a Canary deployment video. Canary deployment. So Canary deployment, I made this video when YouTube started experimenting with percentage experimenting with thumbnails to auto-generate thumbnails instead of using the built-in thumbnail, custom thumbnail. So I talked about how do they make like 3% of the traffic serve them automated thumbnail versus, I don't know, the rest of the 97 serve them the regular software. So that, how do you change the code so that you do Canary deployment, right? Essentially, or blue green deployment. I forgot what's the small difference between the two. Canary deployment is A-B testing almost, right? So A-B testing is like you have to kind of, it's like one way or the other. So for the period of time, you point all your, I might be wrong there, you might all your customers into single version of your app and you test and you record and then you shift to version B from version A to version B and then you test again and then measure. So A, B testing, right? I believe Canary deployment is taking a shave of part of the app. Okay, 3% go there and then the rest of the percent goes there. I might be wrong there, by the way, guys. So call me out if I said something stupid. Reader Garcia. Hi, Hussein. Thank you very much for all the awesome content that you have been sharing. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you, too. Thank you so much, guys. All right. Sheesh. We've been streaming for 2.5 hours. Sa'atan wa nisf. 2 hours and 23 minutes. Du er von quatre menu. I don't have languages to say the clock. Appreciate you guys. I think we're going to end the stream right here. This was really unexpected. We started the stream and we end up with great questions. I have no idea what to call this, what to title this stream. But thank you so much. I'm going to start go make lunch, I guess. So now, time for lunch. It's almost 2 o'clock, is it? Ish, yeah. 2 o'clock in the afternoon here in California. Thank you so much, guys. Where are you from? I'm from Bahrain. Check my story. I talked about how I moved to the States. Best book for backend, please. I don't have any recommendation for backend per se, but there's a lot of good books that I made a video about books. Check out my videos. I make a video that like what is the best book there. First stream of the year. Bye. Thank you guys. Appreciate you. Ayudos. Mas salama. Au revoir. Happy New Year, everybody. Thank you so much. Stay awesome. And love you. And stay humble. Stay hungry. And don't be arrogant, because there is always someone who will know better than you. And the idea here is just, how can you learn something from that someone? It's like, if you listen to a conversation, the main goal should be not to wait for him or her to shut up so you can say what you think. The idea is like, how can you extract useful information? And boy, that's very, very generous if you do that. You're going to get better. Thank you so much. Ma'asalama. Goodbye. And stay awesome. Happy New Year. I wish you a wonderful 2021. It's going to be Zapity, as Michael Scott said. It's going to be Zapity. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It was a fun stream. And I'm off tomorrow. Doing my thing. And check out the content. I don't know if I'm going to make a video about it tomorrow, but I'm going to see you very, very soon, hopefully. I'm going to see you in the next one. Guys, stay awesome. Goodbye. Love you.